Hello, again, everybody. It's Chris Soth from MillionDollarScreenwriting.com and YourScreenplayMentor.com. And I'd like to bring on Jason Scoggins of It's on the Grid. Jason, are you there?
I'm here. Hi, Chris.
Hey. Well, let's dive right into the material this week because, as you see, October was a, shall we say, an unusual month, a record-setting month.
It was a banner month. That's right. What we saw last month was a total of 20 spec sales in 1 month, which we've never seen before. Now, I'll put in a caveat that I haven't been tracking all that long, just for the last couple of years since the writer's strike, basically. But 20 in a month has got to be some sort of record. I mean, it's a crazy number. Usually, you know, the most we've seen in the past is I think 12 a couple of years ago, and this is such a big number over that I can't imagine that there's been a month like this in the past, or certainly in the recent past.
It's really impressive. I mean, I was part of the what was called the spec script boom in the 90s. I came in sort of on the tail end of it, unfortunately, but I don't, unfortunately, nobody was doing the very good work that you were doing at that time and tracking spec scripts. And I always wish somebody had been and giving us the numbers the way you are and putting out the spec market scorecard the way you are, saying here's what sold, here's who bought it, here's who was representing it. Such a valuable resource. But 20, I mean, that is one every business day of the month. And we had seen, you know, spec sales dwindle down to a trickle. Of course, we've only been, you know, tracking since the most recent strike. There were boom days. People still aren't getting quite the money that they were getting in the 80s and 90s. I sort of think the golden age of spec script was after that strike they had in the 80s. But we've never seen this before. So why don't we jump right into a few of these, and why don't you give us your thoughts on what it means for the future, for November and beyond?
Well, I wish I had a crystal ball. That'd be fantastic. You know, I suppose just, you know, putting my own thinking cap on, I feel like it could go either way, that the studios that are buying a huge number of pieces of original material, like Warner Brothers, for example, which in the I didn't go back and look at the end of 2010 again, but it's somewhere in the neighborhood of, I think it's like 21 or 22 spec scripts just since last fall. So more than the last year, but not a whole lot more than the last year. You know, you could argue that they're, you know, that's plenty for them for the foreseeable future. But we don't really see a slowdown. I guess we'll just have to see how the new market comes back once everybody sort of goes away for the holidays and comes back after Sundance. It'll be interesting to see what happens there. But for the most part, the rest of the studios haven't been buying a huge number, so there's no reason to think, on principle, that they wouldn't continue to add scripts to their coffers. You know, 4 and 5 and 6 scripts from the major studios is pretty standard. Some buy more than others. You know, it's hard to see patterns there. It could be as much about who's running the studio and what other things are going on, whether they're buying pitches in addition to books and whatnot. So other than the very odd anomaly of Warner Brothers buying 14 so far this year and a total of 21 or 22 in the last year and a half, I don't see a reason that this, you know, that it'll slow down as we go forward into the next coming months.
Well, wouldn't that be great? I mean, wouldn't it be great if the record became the new status quo and we set a higher record even than that? And if some lucky writer that we knew, maybe listening to this call, was the one who was, you know, was picked that day, just like there's a lottery winner every day. It would be great if we could figure out why and if there was some way we could influence it to keep going, but let's not look a gift horse in the mouth and just cross our fingers and hope.
One of the interesting things is looking year over year, the number of specs that have sold in the previous 2 years is in the low 60s and the low 70s. And this year, actually, there's a spec sale that is happening right now, a script that hit the market sort of wide this morning, got a preemptive offer, and I'm told is sold. I can't say who bought it yet. anyway, that's neither here nor there, except to say that already in November we've seen 4 spec sales, so we're already at 92 for the year. So I just like that magic number of 100. It'd be great to get to 100 this year, and then it's anyone's guess.
That would be great.
Whether we hit those numbers again next year.
Well, November only has to hit the previous record, I guess, with 8 more to to get us to 100. Right. That's all we ask, is we set a new record every month.
Yeah, that'd be good.
Well, let's Now, this is the last quarter of the year, and of course the holidays are coming up. We've got to expect a slowdown come Thanksgiving if this year was like every year in history before it. But is it possible that you know there is there something we know that we can presume about studio financing, that they have to kind of empty out their coffers to have them replenished by the end of the year, that you know if they don't spend what's in their development funds, they'll get less next year?
Well, the last couple of years, just to sort of focus on what's about to happen over the next 6 weeks as we run through the holidays, what tends to happen is I don't have inside info to say that everybody has spent their budget into the holidays. I think it's probably less about that than the fact that people start to go on vacation, frankly. And so if you're an agent or a manager trying to put a piece of material into the marketplace as widely as possible, you want all of the buyers to be available to step up and bid on it. At least that's sort of the conventional wisdom. There's certainly plenty of examples where you slip it to the one buyer who's right for it. But anyway, just from a macro standpoint, when not every buyer is geared up to buy, it doesn't make a lot of sense to take a ton of material into the marketplace. And that's sort of borne out by the numbers that we see in December year over year. I think each of the last 2 years has been one spec sale. And, you know, there's no necessarily any reason to think it would be fewer. But, you know, to see 3, 4, and 5 sell in December, I think would be a surprise. And then you have that same dynamic happening in January where people are coming back from vacation, getting set for the new year, and then also getting geared up for Sundance. Really, the spec market doesn't roar back into, doesn't really come back until February. So what we would expect to see in December and January is, you know, a few spec sales here and there, one or two, and to see more than that would be a nice surprise.
Right. But I was asking more about studio accounting practices. Do they have to, you know, are we looking at motivated buyers who have to spend a certain amount before the year is out?
Well, I think in theory, yes. Although I think if you look back at the actuals, like what has actually happened the last couple of Decembers, maybe that's not so much the case. I do know that different studios are on different fiscal years. So, you know, I think there's a couple of studios where their money replenishes at the beginning of Q4, at the beginning of October. So that may well have been a factor for October's numbers in and of themselves. But I don't have the inside information to sort of quote chapter and verse which studios get their money replenished when.
I didn't know that either, which is why I asked you. But I just wonder if maybe October, November will be the boom time of the year, as we were speaking last year about April being such a great time.
Sure.
And sort of being the record. But let's hope that it's regular and not unusual. So we talk about some of the scripts that sold.
Sure. Well, in the Spec Market Roundup document that I sent out last week, it listed each of the 20, and you and I, when we conferred earlier today about which of these were particularly interesting, what I was noticing, there's a couple of interesting things that I've seen. There's one of the projects that sold is called Grim Knight. Verve took it out. Some producers are attached, Brian Bertino and Adrian Biddle, and they put together a teaser trailer for the script. Prior to taking it out, I remember seeing the trailer and not thinking all that much of it, and then suddenly the script had sold to Universal, in particular with Mark Platt producing. And I thought that was an interesting thing. I know that there's a project in the marketplace right now that has a similar thing happening. That I don't remember what it's called off the top of my head, but there's another one like that right now in the marketplace. And then there's a project called Gone. And my understanding is that there was something similar where the sales presentation or the sort of package that was put around it was not typical, which is to say they didn't just send a script into the marketplace. It was more of a sort of a hand-sold sort of more strategic in the way it was positioned for Universal as well in that case. In fact, that was Mark Platt as well.
And okay, so just to note the unusual marketing here, there was a trailer attached to the project.
That's right.
Okay, so they shot a trailer for their movie.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Right,
which
people have done to
cut together a trailer for a film that's coming out just to get to whet people's appetite for it. That was the function of the trailer associated with Grim Knight as well.
Absolutely. So I'm just looking through these. I want to just pick out a few. I mean, time will not allow us to talk about all 20 of these scripts.
No.
I guess I just have to say, guys, you've got to subscribe to It's on the Grid if you want to know the future of these 20 and everyone that sells, you know, sold this year. And you definitely have to be a subscriber to the Spec Market Roundup just to see what's out there. I have to say that there are, you know, some cool ideas, but I can't say that I feel like anything but one or two really knocked my socks off. And in a way, that's kind of good news, because it's a lot of pressure on a writer to say, well, I've got to come up with the idea that after 100 years of movies, no one has come up with and will, you know, shake everybody's, you know, in the very foundation of the industry. It's got to be the next Avatar or Titanic or Gone with the Wind. You know, you pick yours. But a lot of these seems to be, you know, very standard sort of, you know, programmers of, you know, good, decent ideas, I hope well executed, that kind of say, well, we're in the movie business again.
Well, I don't think, you know, one thing that we've seen in the marketplace over the last year or so is that what we haven't seen is, for the most part, is scripts that have sold strictly because the concept was good and with the intention of redeveloping it from scratch. I mean, the studios just don't throw their money at projects that way with that same sort of eye toward developing it for several years. What they're looking for is projects that are, or scripts that are so well executed and so tight that maybe a polish under a director's supervision, they could get to production relatively quickly. Now, that obviously that's the goal, and that close to done. But you're not seeing, you know, I think we have to assume that the execution for the bulk of these is pretty fantastic. And you could, you know, and so I'll do my own devil's advocate position. You know, there's a number of these which had major attachments associated with them when they went out to studios. For example, there was a script called He's Fucking Perfect, if you excuse my language, is the name of the script.
Mm-hmm. I was going to change it to Effin, because I had picked that one out to talk about as well.
All right, He's Effin Perfect, although that it was actually written out on the title page. Anyway,
it's right there. It's right, yeah, yeah.
That.
Not safe for work.
Exactly.
My
apologies.
Yeah, well, this month's issue of Spec Market Scorecard. I've seen that in the last few years. There have been a few titles that sold. There was I Want to F Your Sister. There was F Buddies, which I think became one of the two movies that was about people who have a friends with benefits relationship.
It's an interesting thing. There's been quite a bit of that over the last year or so. I mean, obviously they're going to change the title. With this particular one, it was written by Adam McKay's former assistant. Adam McKay is Will Ferrell's producing partner with Gary Sanchez, and is a writer, director, and producer as well. That sold for $1 million against $1.5 million, and the price was so high, I'm sure I wasn't alone in wondering what exactly was going on with that besides just having Will Ferrell and Adam McKay attached to produce, which is great, but it turns out that and I think this is out there now, that Emma Stone is attached to star, and I think they had already...
Yeah, it's right here on the Roundup.
Yeah. By the time
we wrote the Roundup,
the fact that Emma Stone was attached to it was fairly common knowledge. But that by the end of the day, when the news of the sale got out, you know, it didn't make it into the stories or written about it at first, but Emma Stone was apparently attached at the outset.
And guys, again, this is all right in the... spec script sales. I mean, I think I said earlier that the money is not as big, but this is $1 million against 1.5, and that means $1 million, and another $500,000 for the writer should he get final written by or screenplay by credit, not shared.
Actually, I think usually when I hear that phrase, it's usually an extra $500,000 in this case when the script goes into production. Sort of like a script, you know, like a bonus, but not so much about, you know, who knows what the terms of the deal were, but usually when you hear that phrase, it's specifically related to the movie going into production as opposed to final credit per se.
Well, that's great. That's an improvement in the writer's lot.
Yeah, for sure.
Before that would have just been if no one had done a rewrite till then.
Yeah.
So,
you still get built into those deals, you know, bumps and bonuses for stuff like that. And if the movie makes X percent, you know, or X, you know, X million dollars by a certain time, you know, right, bonuses based on box office, that sort of thing is, you know, probably built into those deals as well. But in my experience, usually when you hear $1 million against 1.5, what that really refers to is the extra money if it goes into production.
Okay, well, hey, I noticed that our special surprise guest is on the line. So, Brooklyn, are you out there?
I am.
Hey, man.
Hey, guys. In fact, I actually read that spec the day it sold, and it was so good. You guys were talking about he's effing perfect?
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. Such a good script. Such a good project.
Well, let me introduce you to our audience. We've got, a couple of hundred now of aspiring screenwriters on the line who selling a script like that for one against $1.5 million would be just effing perfect for them.
nice one.
Ladies and gentlemen, this is Brooklyn Weaver, lit manager and genius himself, and a guy who reads material and tracks down material like nobody I know, and loves a high concept, loves a hook. I've spent many an hour rep by Brooklyn working out my ideas with him. And Brooklyn is represented on this month's Spec Market scorecard as well. So, Brooklyn, before you came on, Jason and I were just talking about, 20 spec sales in October. What the heck does this mean? Is this a brighter future? Do you have any take on that yourself?
You know, it's something that Jason and I we spoke a little bit, and then I was included on the wrap, and I think it's a great thing. I think it's a great moment for Hollywood in terms of the fact that as a corollary to my observation of a lot of the initial, all the lower hanging fruit, and that's not to say bad, but just the bigger IP of whether it's everything from Transformers, which is a massive franchise, all the way to across the Mattel and Hasbro, Isles, and so all that IP has been sort of bought up or sold. And I think including revisionist franchises now like Sherlock Holmes, and I just saw the Snow White trailer, and I definitely want to give a shout out to everyone involved in that because
totally.
It looks phenomenal.
Totally great.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. Rupert, who was on Low Dweller for a minute, it looks like he crushed that. I have to, it looks really cool. So,
yeah,
and that's
career.
Obviously a revisionist tale. So a lot of that is still in development and will be coming out. And as long as it's inventive and cool looking like Snow White and obviously Sherlock Holmes, then they'll do well. But I think what moviegoers are craving right now is something fresh, something compelling. When you've got 190 channels and you've got the internet and you've got gaming, which is a huge business, social networking, all that, commanding eyeballs. What's going to compel you to go to the theater and in these times and be taken on an adventure that's worth your money? And I think that's literally what it's coming down to. And in the past couple of years, or a lot of the reboots just haven't commanded those eyeballs for whatever reason. And no one goes into making a movie or anything in Hollywood and not making the best version that they can. It's just very hard to make something great. It's exciting. It's exciting in terms of new ideas because that's the hot new IP out there. And
really?
And
so, but I'll just bring everybody in and say when Brooklyn is saying IP, it took me two or three times. It's intellectual property you're talking
right,
about.
Right,
right.
Right. To be more specific,
yeah.
Whereas we'll just use any number of open writing projects that were out there. Ouija board, okay? Massive. Whether you're at an agency or at a studio, I totally understand why that's a big franchise potential.
Sure.
It's a massive board game. All the metrics that would go into the reasoning of why to make that movie are on the scorecard. So if you're as a movie business in Hollywood has gotten so corporatized and money is tight and everyone wants to make safe, pragmatic decisions, I totally understand why that type of project
sure.
gets precedent. And Battleship and things like that, because there's an awareness in that IP that's pre-existing. The challenge for the creatives involved is to make it compelling on a level that is going to warrant you know, whether it's the 3D prices or what have you. Just
mm-hmm.
that, as you know, everyone with a anyone with a family or just anyone just taking a date to a movie, it's not a cheap. It's not as cheap as it used to be, especially in these times.
Mm-hmm.
So getting people out there is the biggest denominator right now. And for whatever reason, a lot of the recent movies haven't, and that's the challenge, just to stay relevant.
Is what I hear you saying that maybe we're seeing a return to original material, the row has been hoed as far as pre-franchise stuff? I know that there's sort of a lot of feeling in town, and one reason that Warner Brothers may be snapping up so many specs is they were in a big "what do we do after Harry Potter?"
Right.
Sort of.
Yeah,
a thing.
I mean, that's not an observation lost on anyone. I think they're. It's good to see. It's great to see a studio that's done a great franchise and done it to the best version that any studio could ever do it and market it perfectly, to now they're looking to. They're betting on themselves again, and to me that's one
mm-hmm.
of the, you know, best, obviously best run studios out there, and everyone there is super confident.
Yeah, absolutely.
So what they're looking to do is they're betting on themselves, they're doubling down, and I would put my money on them they'll find the next one, or they'll generate the next one like they did. It was Lionel Wigram who wrote the outline for Sherlock Holmes. So that studio will definitely find the next big one, and they're spending the money to do so. And that's exciting.
Very exciting for all the writers listening. You think, you know, they could be some small, you know, puzzle piece in what they're putting together. So I don't want to bury the lead, though. I think we can circle back and talk about he's effing perfect. Brooklyn, for the second month in a row, you know, we've done, you know, this is only our second of these calls and podcasts. You've got a sale right here in the Spec Market scorecard. So, and I was reading it through, and I just skimmed these at first, and he's effing perfect jumped out at me, and this one did as well as, oh, well, that's the cool one. That's the one I wish I'd written. And there I look up, and there's Brooklyn Weaver again. Second month running. So what can you tell us about Wake Cycle?
Very cool and talented writer-director team. And right now it's in development, so I don't want to speak out of turn, but that project is just a contained, elevated thriller that takes place in a post-apocalyptic environment and that is a slow burn. And it centers on two essentially scientific janitors who are tasked with overlooking the future of mankind. So that's pretty much what I would say about it. But it's a great script, and it's going to be a great project. And the director involved is very talented.
That's great.
Well, I can say more because I think, or Jason can spill a little more because it's right here in Spec Market Scorecard. Jason, well. do you mind, Brooklyn? I mean, it's
no,
out
I
there.
I don't. Yeah,
okay. Because I think this is a super cool idea. It's Christian Cantemessa and Chris Pacetto. Have I got the names right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah.
And so what Brooklyn was saying was true, but Wake Cycle refers to the 90 minutes of available air. So this facility where I guess everybody's sort of in suspended animation or asleep, and for 90 minutes a day, these two janitors are let out of their sleep chambers to, you know, clean up and maintain the facility. But then one of their sleep tanks is damaged, and and in something less than 90 minutes, there's not going to be any air or something like that, right? And one of them will die, and they end up facing off against each other?
Correct.
Okay. Almost like a futuristic Saw or something like that, or the good version of Saw, had they really stuck to their concept.
Mm-hmm.
So... just so tight and so cool, and this is the kind of thing that I think Brooklyn Weaver and Energy Entertainment are kind of
in terms of the business point of that, which is whether you're, you know, in this case it was a writer director team, but there, if you look at the types of movies getting made, and specifically the types of movies that are succeeding, of course buyers and producers are looking to, you know, looking at success and wanting to do different versions of that, and so. There is a very exciting micro-budget market, and when people look at something like Paranormal Activity and they say, yeah, that's a micro-budget $1 million movie, you know, I think everyone in Hollywood considers micro-budget 10 and under, really, just pragmatically, because
I think that's right.
So much effects goes into these movies, and the numbers, Paranormal Activity was, from what I understand, a little bit of an anomaly, because it was a pickup and then just sort of a re-edit, and obviously the marketing on it was genius, and the movie franchise is awesome, but I specifically in terms of that, what we were targeting, and we did it with on a couple fronts that have been announced this year. But okay, what writers have ideas that we can basically frame as a micro-budget movie and tailor the idea into that zone. So if you're a screenwriter, being observant of not just like what's selling, but what movies are getting made and performing, because that's really what's selling. If you extrapolate backwards, the things that are selling are what studios want because they see they're performing. You know, Sherlock and the movies in that vein, the revisionist movies, are doing well, and so studios want more of that. So we sold, you know, Columbus or, you know, all the various revisionist movies out there. But with that project specifically, it happened to be an idea that we felt could be executed in a contained zone and be presented as, and you get to a place where you can present it as, here's the look, here's the director's presentation, here's the screenplay, this is a go movie, do you want to make it or not? So that's how that gets presented, as, you know, you put the money in. We actually had a lot of people interested in that, but we wanted to tailor the package so that it guaranteed the director being attached as well. So whether you're just a writer or a writer-director, I think this is probably the most exciting time in history to break into Hollywood, just because of the appetite for lower budget movies. They used to be all star driven, but at a certain budget range, you can really get one made for in production for a price.
Well, I mean, the thing that jumped out at me about this is, and the kind of thing I'm looking for and starting to make myself now, is it's not just low budget, it's high concept.
Right.
So,
right.
It, you know, I mean, it's very high concept and
right.
could shoot for a song. I mean, you could, you know, make up your own house to be this hyperbaric sleep chamber, or you could, you know, do it on a sound stage and green screen, industrial light and magic, and throw a few more million bucks around. But either way, there's nothing about the story that marries you to any specific budget. And then you can, you know, drop it all on cast and get some great actors who bring something in, or what, you know,
what they saw.
Yeah,
Chris, you bring up a good point, because it inherently is tailored for great acting as well and directing, because what you need to do is sustain the tension and the plot in a very contained area. So that, in an interesting way, that appeals to, you know, a lot of actors who, you know, like Ethan Hawke's doing a micro-budget movie with Jason Blum. I think if you're an actor at a certain point, and you can structure a deal that has significant upside, you want the challenge of keeping the audience interested in you for 90 minutes.
Right, and you know, actor bait, and you know, you and stars love to work with stars. I mean, it just seems to be, you know, sort of a great project all around. Can you tell us just, you know, sort of as a case study, how the project first came to you, how you met these clients, where the idea was spawned, and through the development of the script, and eventually, you know, the great good news of a sale.
That one, I have to say, Adam Marshall found the writer directors, and they had the idea. So it was, the script came in, and then was subsequently developed, and the presentation material was polished, and the strategy was implemented in terms of how we were going to take it out, who we were going to target, and then, you know, we got lucky to find a suitor. So that's the short end of it.
Would you take a second, if you don't mind, Brooklyn, and talk about that idea of presentation material? Because that's something that doesn't get talked about all that often, far and wide, about the idea that it's, you know, you have to have a fantastic script that's well executed and a great concept that a marketing department could get behind. But in addition, you have to, you know, sort of hold the buyer's hands and sort of get them on board with you. And oftentimes that requires additional material. I don't know if you were on the call when we were talking about Grim Knight with that trailer.
Having
sales material in addition to the spec itself is kind of fascinating to me. So I'm curious whether you guys had something that went along with the spec with the script itself as well in this case.
We definitely did. Yeah, the Grim Knight trailer was cool. Just because it showed speculatively what the trailer would look like. There's been ideas that have sold. I'll give you the 360 sort of degree answer on this. There's no right or wrong way to do a presentation. A director has sold an idea that he would be contractually attached to write and direct by just putting together a rip-o-matic, which is just public domain material that exists on the internet that he edits and cuts and frames into a mock trailer of the movie. So imagine Grim Knight, but actually that was shot as and generated as a spec trailer, but there's a version of Grim Knight that you probably could have put together through Rip-O-Matic software and created something close to that without ever having to leave your apartment.
Yeah.
So that's what Rip-O-Matic's called
right now. I can't remember which project it is, but something came out just last week, I think, with a Rip-O-Matic trailer attached.
Right. So in terms of presentation material, there's no rules, and the only format being there is a familiar sort of, in terms of the format, here's the trailer for the movie. That's one way to do it, and it can be as extensive as you want. In the case of Grim Knight, first-time director, it was a spec screenplay and that spec trailer, and that worked. And obviously with a writer-producer on board who has success in that arena with Strangers.
Yeah.
So that brand in the presentation in the eyes of the buyer was they know how to make this type of movie competently. And the good news is they're going to have a writer-director himself oversee that other first-time writer-director. So that was a really well-played way to go. In terms of ours, it was original material that was compiled into a lookbook that you some of it was generated by on behalf of the director, some of it was public domain, but nevertheless it's a sort of a lookbook in terms of a PDF format that was about 25 pages. And that's all, like, you know, that's the director's it's their vision of the movie. And so as you the reason they call it a lookbook is it's literally almost like a graphic novel. So he'll walk you through it. You just, as you scroll through the various pages, and you get a sense of the not only the mood and the tone and the look of the movie, different various scenes, but there's also some description within the scene. So you get sort of a general, literally almost like a graphic novel, but a shortened version. Like my vision for the movie in terms of tone. And then again, in this case, a Rip-O-Matic was also put together that was part of the presentation.
That's cool.
So you had the script, you had a director with VFX background, a director who had shot a short that had a lot of success, and then also put together a presentation. And even then, it isn't easy.
So now, is this almost, and this is news to me, is this widely done? Is it pretty much everybody does that now? I mean, a script doesn't sell without some presentation material, which might be artwork, a lookbook, which is, I'm just gathering, pretty much self-explanatory, but a here's what the movie's going to look like, sort of compiled into a coffee table book. A trailer. So, is that just done everywhere now?
There is no right or wrong way to do it. Just like with pitches, some people just go in and will sit there and quietly tell a pitch, or some other people bring in like presentation material. However you score the touchdown, there's no right or wrong way to necessarily do it. But I think in terms of...
Well, the right way is the way that scores, I think. Right,
right? Exactly, is the way that scores. And everyone has their unique way of going about it. But generally speaking, anytime there's a director involved, unless they have a body of work, and even then, at a certain point, you're going to be required to have presentation material and show your vision and so that it can help articulate it. And when you're trying to sell a younger director or a writer-director team, that's just inherently part of the process these days, and not expensive, just given with the new software out there. I'm really excited because I feel like for directors, it's the equivalent of when, like, the screenwriting software was invented and you could email out scripts, because right now with the type of software that and compression if you have a limited VFX background, you can do tons of cool stuff without having to, you know, have your dad be Zemeckis. And
right.
So the art of being a director now is the playing field is getting leveled. And to me, that's one of the most exciting things about film as well. We're going to see directors come. I just signed a director from the Netherlands that I haven't even met yet. And just saw his short and was blown away and got in touch. And obviously managers and agents are doing that all over the place. But he has no formal film school training, and I'm putting him together with one of my writers. So it's getting really exciting. But, of course, the end product has to be something that someone sees on a trailer and says, wow, I want to see that movie. So if that's the goal and you make that part of your presentation material, a studio exec can say, shit, that's a cool trailer. Like, Grim Knight was a cool trailer. So if you're university, you're like, we'll make – that's a movie that we want to make. So we're going to buy that script.
Yep. Yeah, absolutely. So this is being done all over the place. I mean, I remember sort of a famous story of a famous spec sale of a movie that was never made, which was called The Ticking Man, where they sent that out with an alarm clock. And it was a man who was essentially a human time bomb.
Right.
And I know that when they did the reboot of Willard, which is I don't know if anybody of this generation knows that's a remake.
They sent out the rat.
They actually sent live rats with the script, and so that's true. Then I actually spoke to somebody who claimed to have been a part of that. And there's at least one
project, The Dictator. Didn't like a goat get delivered to a couple of studios?
Yes. To Paramount, yeah.
Yeah,
or to all the studios, yes. But I think those are fun gimmicks, and of course WME is behind a lot of they have a great, like, a lot of personality in that regard. And tend to be behind some of those types of projects. But I think in terms of, like, if you're a decision maker and you are shown a trailer for a spec trailer for a movie that looks unbelievable in terms of its concept and its appeal, that's ultimately what you're selling to buyers, to moviegoers. If you can see a vision of that, and there's even a screenplay that goes along with it and a presentation kit, and for the certain, then now you're buying. You can see the movie. And
would you say, I think I have to think it helps internally too, because the people who are exposed to the script and have authority to buy the script and even sometimes greenlight the movie still need to sell everyone internally at the studio on the project to get it greenlit and made. So you need to get, you know, international and home video and marketing in particular on board. And I have to think that if you have those extra materials where you can, you know, you can have those in hand when you're saying, here's why we're greenlighting Wake Cycle, that's got to be a benefit as well.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Well, I think it's, that's how we all decide whether we're going to this movie, right? Is by seeing the trailer, you know, months in advance. I think, and if you're, you know, doing the marketing department's job for them, you know, maybe it says they're lazy, but maybe it says you're industrious. I don't know.
Or at least, showing them that, like, this is a version of the movie. It's a jumping off point for how you can market it. And they're like, wow, that looks cool. We know there's a lot of possibility there. Yes, it makes it easier because at the end of the day, you're in Cannes, you're in AFM, you're in Berlin, you're wherever you're at, you're selling. You got to sell it, and you're not going to have the luxury of anyone reading the script.
Right.
You can't depend on that. So if they can see it, and then of course, and there's some recognizable faces. That's good. It just makes it easier.
Got it. Well, I just pulled up Grim Knight to take a look myself, and this was on the one of the other ones I thought was pretty good, and a trailer would put it over the top for me too. And Grim Knight, the log line is a night that happens once a year all over the world, where people lock themselves in at home and fend off the senseless and random attacks by Grimms, which I assume are some sort of monster. It's capitalized
right.
here in the log line. Then I assume that's, you know, in some alternate world or future where it's really quite the opposite of Christmas Eve, as far as I can tell. It really just sucks on Grim Knight. but that with a really cool trailer that, you know, gives some subtle hint of what this monster might look like and what the origin was, why, you know, there in that world and future, they've got the Grimms and we don't. And yet in some way that sort of connects it to us. Pretty cool. I'll just throw the question out there. Is there a way online that our listeners might be able to actually see that trailer? Did they put it up on a website, or was it sort of just emailed around with the script?
That I probably can't give out right now, only because not on this one. But you're mm-hmm. you're. It's a good question to ask, because the fact is, Grim Knight was marketed in a different way. Our package went out a little bit differently because it was a director really trying to make the transition in his own way. So there's no right or wrong way to sell these. But our presentation was a little bit more not as sort of viral or on the internet per se.
But I think Grim Knight is. I think if my recollection, it was on Vimeo, VIMEO.com,
yeah.
And I'm sure you could look up Grim Knight there and.
So go to Vimeo, search Grim Knight, and
yeah.
See how a couple of guys made some money. That's Brandon
yeah.
Bestenheider and Alan Bayer. Congratulations.
And in fact,
so,
I mean, there will be a version, and I'm sure people are already doing it, when if you're saying, and I'm not recommending it, by the way, but I'm sure someone who has a directing background or has access to Rip-O-Matic software can send a query at some point that says, here's my high concept, here's the log line, here's basically a Rip-O-Matic of the trailer. And you're like, here, that's a cool idea. I see the tone that you're going for. That's either for me or not for me. And people will be doing that with ease soon, I'm sure.
Right. Well, a couple of years ago, I was saying that I think the spec screenplay one day is going to be replaced by the spec movie, and it seems to be getting closer and closer.
Well, the spec trailer is good enough, I feel like, right now, but
Right.
You're not wrong. In terms of the spec movie, here's an interesting one. I'll just throw it out there. My friends just did a movie for less than $1 million, shot in Indonesia, called The Raid. So that's basically a spec movie, because it was made and in the can for less money than Fox paid for the spec. He's fucking perfect. And now it's being remade, and it's sold for more in terms of the remake rights by Screen Gems. It's going to go into production and for a higher budget, U.S., and they are retaining that format all over the world. To me, that is a genius business model.
Totally.
So shout-out to XYZ and their project, The Raid. So that was basically a spec movie that was made in Indonesia that happened to come in and was executed very well. That's now being remade in America. But the interesting thing is it's not a quote-unquote foreign remake. It was an American production company who went over there to shoot it and then bring it back home, which is pretty cool.
And Paranormal Activity, which you mentioned before, was originally picked up with the idea of a remake.
Exactly.
Wasn't it?
Good point.
Yeah. And I think I think this is lesser known, but Meet the Parents. There was a cheap little indie film made called Meet the Parents by a bunch of nobodies, and it became the gigantic franchise that it was. And as far as I can tell, you know, Universal or whoever owned it has kind of buried the fact that there ever was another movie. But
yeah, it's interesting. That's a good point. Yeah, I guess they got the remake rights for it, and they just sold it to Uni.
Right, you know, Mr. Stiller and Mr. De Niro on board, and next thing you know, three movies later. So, and it seems like, you know, with the amount of effort and work that it takes to make a movie, you know, to write a screenplay, you know, isn't that worth $10,000 and shooting for a couple of weekends at your house to get it out there to really be seen, or shooting the trailer?
Well, it doesn't even cost $10,000. I mean, if you're shooting in a weekend at your house with your own camera and your own, you know, editing on your laptop, you know, you can get that done for nothing, literally nothing.
Literally nothing, yeah.
Well, I think, right, yeah. I think de facto here we've selected Grim Knight and Wake Cycle, and he's effing perfect as sort of the lens to which to see a, you know, a banner month of spec sales. Those three, are there any others that you guys think, well, you know, this idea, this sale here is kind of the future, or what the kind of thing you should be developing now as a screenwriter and sort of indicative of a trend? Because I think both, you know, the high concept, low budget is what I would advise everybody to be looking for, you know, when they go to their idea file or their brainstorming session.
It's there in terms of that, I don't disagree. I feel like if you can create it's great. It's cool in a number of ways. If you're a screenwriter and you can create really cool characters that you put in a contained environment, like a panic room type environment, then it can showcase, if that's sort of what you're good at, showcase your you know, the tension and characterization that you do. I think you always have to play to your strengths and really know who you are as a writer. But if you're looking to, you know, obviously you want to be mindful of the high concept, but moreover, mindful of, like, what's this movie? What is this movie in terms of what's performed out in the box office? And that's what I'm trying to do more so, because it's not just selling, and we've all sold a bunch of projects. It's getting them made, like, you know, like Chris's movie, it got made, and that's so key these days, is like in the logjam of Hollywood, is how do you not only sell something, which of course everyone on this call wants to do, but if your movie gets made, it's that much more meaningful for you, to you as a screenwriter, because you're produced. So, and by definition, studios are looking to buy movies that are getting made and performing. So that's the third thing to be cognizant of. So whether it's the high concept contained, whatever it is, just be aware of what's performing at the box office, because that's what studios want more of. And there was a dearth, like, I felt like so many screeners were just, and even myself, it was so kind of dismal, because when it's just IP being bought for tons of money, that's great for the IP sellers. When I say IP, the you know, like the, say it's Asteroids or any number one of those big projects, Battleship, it's great for those respective agencies, but it makes it really tough for screenwriters, because then you're like, okay, well, so then what's selling? So now it's the pre-existing fancy screenwriters that are getting hired to adapt those, but that doesn't really encourage the screenwriter trying to break in. It doesn't provide any guidelines as to how you break in, because by definition, nothing was selling for a while. That was new, very little. And now I think the reason we're all on this call is because finally there's becoming some clarity now that there's a new cycle of projects that the studios are craving. And there's no, and they're wanting ideas now, finally. So in that regard, we're seeing it in the sales, but it's also invigorating artists again to tell a compelling story, as opposed to make these Lincoln Logs really come alive.
Hey, just as an aside, has Lincoln Logs the movie been sold yet? Because you just,
I don't know. I was just thinking that. I don't think so.
Tiddlywinks.
Make you better care about those Lincoln Logs. Well, you know, by the way, if you can, it's like, I didn't, God, my hat goes off to Michael Bay, because he really made those, you cared about those robots. And, you know, that was always the question. How do you care about a robot? So how do you make them cool?
Well, I mean, it's not that much of a jump, and, you know, we're saying it as a joke, but I can see by where you're calling from, Brooklyn, that I think you're in the offices of the people making the Lego movie.
I did, which is why I was careful not to mention. And I'm obviously always careful never to say anything potentially disparaging on any front.
I had dinner with that producer one time, and he showed me the trailer on his iPhone, and I did say, "Damn, there should be a Lego movie." So
I know. Yeah.
I hope it's
and
going
it's cool.
Well.
And by the way, kudos to those screenwriters. Anyone who can, you know, turn a Lego movie and make it cool deserves to get paid a lot of money. But again, going back to the main point. It doesn't
right.
provide any framework or to a young screenwriter trying to break in. How do I break in as a screenwriter? Because they already did. That's why they got hired to write the Lego movie. But there's no sort of roadmap for me to break in.
Right. And listen, if they're asking you to write the Lego movie, it means you've already made it. So,
right.
I mean, most of our listeners here are probably thinking, okay, you know, how do I break in? It's not going to be writing your own version of the Lego movie or something like that if you don't
right.
own the rights to it. So, Brooklyn, is this what you're hearing? Is this the word on the street? I mean, the executives that you have lunch with to sort of, you know, sound out about, hey, what are you guys looking for now? I doubt that they would ever say in so many words, hey, original material is back. But this is kind of what you're synthesizing from what they say?
I'm just looking at the same numbers that you guys are. I mean, the great thing about the internet is it's all real time, and if you're, it's all on. We're all looking at the same three or four places that anyone can access pretty much in the world, and that's the other cool thing. So the information's all out there. It's the studios are buying, and that's exciting, and they're buying spec scripts. So it'll last as long as people are thinking of great ideas, because you know. A lot of the pre-branded material is bought up. I mean, Jason, what do you think about, someone may unlock, there's always going to be something new that someone gets the rights to, but
it's easy to look at stuff that's literally worked in the past and consider rebooting it. I don't really think remakes and reboots and adaptations of TV shows, et cetera, are going to go away. I also don't look down my nose at those. You know, I'm a huge fan of movies from the 70s and 80s and 90s, and you know, some of them warrant a reboot with today's technology and whatnot. But I do think that you're right that there is a finite amount of stuff that is inherently adaptable. I think what we'll see is, and I think there were a couple of examples last month as well, adaptations of young adult novels, right? I mean, it's easy to point to the success of Twilight and The Hunger Games and The Maze Runner and see, oh, you know, that's going to be the next big thing. But it's not like adapting books is new. That's been a part of the process for a long, long time.
Those are all original books. It's not like we're remaking Gone with the Wind or
right.
Yeah. So this is all original new stories.
No, exactly, and that's my point. That's the exciting thing to me as a movie goer and an industry watcher. The idea of a shift back to original material and sort of not fearing the idea of having to sell an audience on something they aren't already familiar with. I think you can see in the numbers in the last this year with the pitch sales and spec sales, sort of a shift that way, and I'm hoping that it pans out. And we don't give the studios an excuse to say, well, that didn't work, so we have to go back, you know, and really, really double down on the reboots and whatnot. Because, again, I think there's a place for those, but, you know, where do you think the new franchises come from? They're from original ideas from writers like are on this call.
Agreed.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, with all due respect to the people making the movie, Lego and Battleship is not the first place you go when you're looking for intellectual property. It means, you know, Batman and Spider-Man and the Titanic are already taken, probably. And so I think Brooklyn's right that maybe, you know, the row's been hoed pretty deep. And this gives you a chance to maybe create the next big franchise, whether you create it as an original screenplay or a novel or a series of novels or your own comic book or whatever it is. I think there's room for the big idea again, and I know the people listening to us have them, and I hope they can take some inspiration from what happened to 20 lucky people or writing teams in October, and may the next one be yours. And I think what Brooklyn was saying about the internet providing opportunities like never before, just want to say, guys, you gotta subscribe to the Spec Market Roundup by Jason Scoggins. I mean, we're just looking at this, and you know, you heard me reveal more about Brooklyn's project than he wanted to reveal, and it's right there. I mean, this is really the inside.
Because it's out there.
It is out there, and
it's exciting for a writer because you can really arm yourself with all the mystique. And I read it's great, the bio on your website, Chris. But the mystique of what does Hollywood want is transparent now, because you can look at the numbers of box office. You can get most any script online these days. You can get all the information in terms of sales, log lines. And then if you look at whether it's He's Effing Perfect, well, that's just a Cyrano, a version of Cyrano. It's a reverse Cyrano, a girl who basically vets all the would-be suitors for her friends, finds one that she's really interested in, and tries to keep her away to get him herself. So my point being that there's still a literary template there. And then whether, you know, and that comes down to, like, what's the movie in this? Oh, it's a literary twist mm-hmm. on this. And I can see that story paradigm. Or why don't we do Sherlock Holmes, but that was the original Lethal Weapon. Was the Sherlock and Watson, okay? So from the studio right. Lethal Weapon, I'm like, I totally get that badass, tongue-in-cheek, cantankerous tone. Okay, perfect.
Mm-hmm.
So it's also, what is the movie? And being able to point to success in that arena. And so whether it's literary templates, remakes, big underlying IP, they're looking for either pre-awareness or success that they can apply to the feature film or the TV platform.
Well, it's great news, and I think everybody listening should find this really encouraging for their own writing, and to, you know, return to that search for the big idea, or jump into that screenplay they're already writing that is the big idea, or get that great idea that they have out there read. And again, a great resource to you know what happens to these spec scripts is it's on thegrid.com, and we have a free month offer available to everybody. And again, I'll say that at yourscreenplaymentor.com, my mentees, who I know are I told attendance tonight was mandatory, who are all listening, get a subscription to It's on the Grid for free to track these projects and track the open writing assignments. And really, you know, taken all together, it's a snapshot of that question: what are they looking for? So, guys, if either one of you can stay, I want to throw open the line to questions. I'm going to stop the recording before that. Brooklyn, you know, you've been a great guest. I don't know if I promise you it'd only be an hour, and we're at 6:30 now. So if you have to go, you have to go. But if you want to stay for a Q&A, we'd love to have you.
I actually do have to go. I'm so sorry, because I actually have a conference call with a client. But I'd be happy to do. So anyone who has any questions can certainly, if there's another time, that to either do a call or they can email me, or we could set a second session. I'd love to do that.
Well, I may as well reveal it now. I got Brooklyn to promise to do a call where I just interview him, guys. So stay on the mailing list. Keep in touch. And our special guest tonight has been Brooklyn Weaver. Next time you're on here, I'm going to ask you a ton of questions about mergers and acquisitions as well, because that was your sale last month.
That's a writer and a great story as well. So we'll just leave it on.
And it's his first time, right? A brand newbie.
He actually, we sold two things for him this year. So yeah,
fantastic.
A client that I'd be really excited to talk about.
Okay.
So
thank
you so much, guys.
Our special guest has been Brooklyn Weaver. Thank you. Thanks so
thank
much.
Thank you so much. Best of luck to everyone.